This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Nicholas Eberstadt. His reissue of his Men Without Work, which was published in the middle of the second decade of the 21st century. We're now in the third decade, and we've survived the pandemic that put everyone out of work momentarily. Nick provides a chapter of some things that we can see that maybe change the argument, maybe do not. Nick, one of the things that I'm struck by right now, again and again, is these numbers are changing not only for men, but also for women. Do I read you correctly that women without work is a rising category?
Yes. Well, unfortunately, the men without work problem that I described in the first edition is worse now than it was then. You could almost draw a straight line from 1965 to the first edition of the book to where we are now, 6 years later. It's a kind of uncanny. But it looks as if other population groups may also be joining this flight from work, including people who are older Americans, 55 plus, 65 plus. And now we're seeing some, I think, warning signs for prime age women. I don't want to say it's a red flashing light, but maybe a yellow flashing light.
Is it a shock or is it a shift of the labor force? Nick asked that question. What is the China shock? How would that contribute to the unknowns?
Well, the first China shock was the China entering the World Trade Organization, which provided an avenue for Chinese manufacturing and low-cost goods into our economy, did a lot of things to lower inflation in the U.S., but it also wreaked havoc on our manufacturing sector over the course of a few years and changed our manufacturing patterns, including work. I mean, we've had a China shock with COVID as well, and that brought us to the brink of a global economic collapse with the shutdowns that you described.
And we also have right now an introduction to, I think it's called Universal Basic Income. UBI, which is a debate in our allies. You note that the supplementary checks that were from the Trump administration and the Biden administration serve as that, but there was also the unemployment benefits that were, I think you report them, they were $600 a week, and then they were reduced to $300 a week. And can you see those in the statistics for not in the labor force?
You can see that there has been a delayed return to work in the United States. Partly, I think, these everybody remembers the $600 and the $300 a week checks, which you could get even if you weren't unemployed, even if you had a fairly high level of income. Everybody remembers that. But there was even more, John. There was with the enormous government transfers that were sent out to avoid a second Great Depression, and may have helped us avoid a second Great Depression. Government spent so much borrowed money on supporting families and businesses in the United States that the U.S. personal disposable income actually went up in 2020 and 2021 above trend. It's the only national economic crisis in history in which people's purchasing power went up. And because of this, savings rates doubled. Above trend savings amounted to over $2.5 trillion. Now that nest egg could be used either to supplement earnings or to substitute for them. And at the moment, we have about 3 million fewer people in the workforce than we would have expected on pre-pandemic trends.
What is to be done? You point to J.D. Vance, who's now a prominent candidate for political office, but his book about his relatives or everyone his relatives know, gaming the system. What does that mean, Nick?
Gaming the system means that you figure out how you can work the the panoply of various government benefits to your advantage. And one of the things which unfortunately is quite real about our archipelago of disjointed disability programs is that it's sometimes possible to qualify for disability by claiming something that can't be falsified. The two most rapidly growing areas of claims and disability are musculoskeletal and psychological. Now, if we go to the doctor, they'll show whether our leg is broken or not. But if I say my back's hurt, or if I say I've got sad feelings, that can't be disproved.
The what is to be done also includes the questions of how can we make work more desirable or fit the supply side. That doesn't eliminate the criminality problem. That doesn't eliminate the drug addiction problem. But it does speak to reducing the disincentives. I'm quoting you here. What would that look like, Nick?
Well, I think there are a couple of things that government can do. There are some things that government cannot do. Government cannot fix our broken families. Government cannot revitalize our national morale or our faith. But government can help to fill the gap in, let's say, vocational skills, which has been opened by the shockingly uneven performance in our school system. It can think about turning around our disability and social welfare programs to bring about, let's say, a work first principle. Every intervention has an unintended consequence, and there'd be an unintended consequence there too, but I think it might be smaller than the ones we have. And government can throw a spotlight on the one in seven adult men who has a felony conviction in his background. We can't have evidence-based policies for how to help people reenter the workforce or families or societies if we don't have the evidence, and we're missing that right now.
We don't have statistics for criminality afterwards. We don't have statistics for who's part-time, not in the labor force, who is black market, not in the labor force. We're missing a great deal of information that would support or in some way enhance men without work, the post-pandemic edition, so far post-pandemic. Nicholas Eberstadt is the author. Nick is at the American Enterprise Institute. He's a political economist. He holds the Henry Wendt Chair at the Institute. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.